This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
I'm Burr Martin from the Burr Martin Experience podcast. Now, as an A-list celebrity...
Brad Pitt is an A-list celebrity.
As a B-list celebrity...
Nicolas Cage.
As a C-list celebrity...
David Hasselhoff.
As a D-list celebrity...
Shia LaBeouf. All right,
as a D-plus celebrity, join me here on the Pants Pending Network, where I discuss everything from comedians, kids, news stories of the week, and even down to asking... What the heck was that foil S thing Superman threw at Non during Superman 2? So make your week better. Look, I'm a celebrity, and I'm doing a free podcast. You know what? You're welcome. That's the Burr Martin Experience. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or even right here on the PantsPending.com network.
Well, hello there. I'm Andrew from Pants Pending Studios, and I want to share with you from the good book of never-ending random discussion.
Again, I trust you are putting your valuables in the center of your living rooms as previously instructed. Good Lord, I hope that's previously instructed.
The never-ending random discussion is a collection of funny and interesting people sitting down to be random.
Why is she naked?
Those eyes are so piercing.
It's...
I forgot that she had tiny little animal eyes, like beady little black eyes. Oh dear God.
Why is she... Why is she covered in frosting? That's weird. That's like a cake thing. That's not for donuts.
It's your favorite flavor.
Anything can happen, and anything does happen. Not that I'm sexist, but kitchens need to stay in women. I went with it.
Kitchens need to stay in women.
That's
Andrew Reisenhuber, 2016.
Find the show at celebrategeek.com/nerd. Tune in and thank me later. Pants pending.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I consider myself a patriot.
Get ready for the Social Hour.
Live from Bayern Brewing in Missoula, Montana. This is The Social Hour. On today's show, brewmaster of Bayern Brewery, Thorsten Goyer. And now your host. Making sure to hit all the breweries so he can stand his family when he sees them. Deese Casillas.
Malapin, everyone, welcome to the show. This is the Social Hour. I am your host, Deese Casillas. Thank you for joining us for another fantastic episode of the Social Hour. I am on the road in Missoula, Montana right now, hanging out with Thorsten Goyer, the head brewmaster at Bayern Brewery in Missoula, Montana. One of the oldest breweries in Montana, in Missoula at least, right?
It's the oldest brewery in the state of Montana.
The oldest brewery in the state of Montana. Now, that's quite an accomplishment for Montana, which I feel like is a place that loves beer. Now, how long, first of all, you guys are coming upon your 30th anniversary, is that right?
That is correct.
When's the 30th anniversary?
So we will have a big bash August 19th, Saturday, downtown Missoula, where everything started for us, down in Karis Park. Live music, cold beer, fun entertainment, fun activities. So it should be a big party.
So it all started downtown for you guys 30 years ago. So how long have you been with Bayern Brewery?
So I'm now in my 15th year with the brewery.
Now, how did you end up? Now, I'm gonna take a wild guess and say you're not from Montana.
That is correct.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Cologne, Germany.
Okay.
I got my brewer's degree, a brewer and a maltster degree in Cologne. I worked at a brewery called Frühkirch And it's a three-year program. It's 9 months on the job and then 3 months at school. And then after 3 years, you can call yourself a brewer and a maltster, and you're allowed to work in a brewer's position or maltster position in a brewery or a malt house.
Now, how did, what was the journey like that from there to, I mean, that's a, to America's one thing, to Missoula, Montana is a completely different story in, you know, coming to America. How did you find that path to get here and find yourself at Bayern Brewery?
So after my 3 years of education to become a brewer and maltster, I continued on my education. I got a brewmaster degree, and I got that one in Berlin.
Okay.
And I was still pretty young, 24 at the time. And I said,
people
I don't want
to
do...
People that can do their math are going to start to age you now. They're going to start to figure out how old you are.
So they, I still was ready for an adventure. I didn't want to do the typical, what you would do in Germany, where you become a second brewmaster or quality control.
Right.
I was young and I loved to travel.
Sure.
And contacted Jürgen. And... everything else is history. I got back today, still an airplane ticket in the mail.
Yeah.
And we got the work visa and the green card worked out. And ever since I'm here.
You've been here. So they've been open for about 15 years when you came along. You came along halfway through there.
Yes.
And were you immediately their brewmaster? Or were you coming on to just kind of, you know, as a temporary thing? Or how did the...
Back the day, the brewery was still on the smaller side. Not to be a ginormous big here, but we were still on the smaller side. So I called it a brewmaster in rubber boots.
Yeah.
Because we still were brewing, planning, quality control, all done in one deal. And then we grew. We're now more in the office and go out if there is something going on in production. But we have brewer and packaging people that take care of that job.
Do all that stuff. So you don't have to do any of that stuff. You just...
Well, I pitch in here and there, but it just gets,
hey, that's the benefit of growth, right?
Yes.
So is it, was it, you know, Bayern Brewery, is they're more of a... Are they considered a more Belgian-style brewery, or what's their...
Absolutely not.
No.
So the name Bayern stands for the state of Bavaria.
Aha.
So the original founders and the still brewmaster owner, they are from Bavaria.
Got it.
And all our, most of our beers, I would say 90% of our beers are truly inspired by Bavarian techniques of brewing. Just lately, we kind of opened up a little bit more, but we brew Bavarian style beer. So we have nothing to do with Belgium. I mean, even... For me, from Cologne, Bavaria is still far away what we would have brewed in Cologne.
Really? What's the difference, some of the differences in that region? Because there, you know, it's funny as you go around the world and the different styles. I feel like Germany and that area, you know, Bavaria, Belgium, things like that, have very unique styles of brewing and beers.
I think they took brewing very serious.
The
original law of purity originated there. People call it a food law, a tax law. I think it just protected the king a little bit more because he was making sure that he had control over alcohol being produced.
Yeah.
And then in Bavaria, it just developed into more, where it wasn't just alcohol, it was beer. It was a thing. I mean, at lunch you have a liter of the beer.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon. And in other areas in Germany, it's not that they don't have beer, but the variety of beers is truly in Bavaria.
Yeah. So is that where the kind of the most of the beers are created? Then they kind of go from there. You're saying that's kind of
That's what you would think. But for example, the Bock style beers, they are not from Bavaria. They were brought from northern Germany to Bavaria, and it had to do with that the Bavarian brewmasters and monks couldn't pronounce the town. By the time they got to Bavaria, it was a Bock style, and the town where it all originated is called Einbeck. So by the time they got back to their hometown out of Beck, it turned into Bock.
Turned into Bock, okay. It's such interesting because from our perspective, the limited perspective of Americans is like, America all kind of seems like one area, where I feel like in other countries there's more regions, very regional things.
Well, I disagree with America is America. I mean, just look at Montana. Western and eastern side of Montana is totally different. Eastern Washington, western Washington are totally different worlds.
Very true,
I think where it becomes very familiar is the big box stores and chain stores, where I've seen that at my hometown, and it kind of turns into the same, but there's still areas where it's very, very unique. Yeah. I mean, here in the Northwest, most people don't speak with an accent, a dialect.
Right.
If you go south, you go down to Texas, you go to the East Coast, things change.
Right.
So yeah. I disagree with where it's all the same. The thing where everything, and it doesn't matter where you go in the U.S., and it might be changing a little bit, a pine class looks like a pine class. East, west, north, south, in the middle, it doesn't matter. It always looks the same.
Okay.
And that is different in Germany.
How so? You got the glass like this, so we're drinking a glass.
That
like
is one style we have out there. We have a little showcase that showcases you the different forms of Pilsner glasses. And everybody believes this is the way to go for your beer. It's just how it presents to people.
Is this more what you call a Stein glass?
That's what they would call it down in Bavaria, okay. And that's what most Americans would call
what
it.
What would you call it?
Krug.
A Krug?
Krug.
Krug. What is that? What's the origin of that?
The Krug is just a big vessel to drink beer. In Cologne, it's a little tiny skinny glass.
To give listeners an idea, this is like a Stein. It's got a large handle. This is what I imagine like in an old Viking movie. Someone like you know, this is what I, that's what I imagine, except wood maybe, but that's about it. So it is interesting the different glassware people want to present beer in and how they think certain styles have present better in certain glasses. Do you guys adhere to that? Is that something you believe in?
I personally believe in it. It's just very hard to do on a scale where we are. We do four types of glasses. So we have the glass Stein, then we have a porcelain Stein, and then we have a pint glass that has a little bit more curve to it, and then we have a Pilsner flute. So we do have four glasses, but if, like I said, we take a look at the glassware that is for, I would say, 15, 25 different forms of Pilsner glasses, a flute, a tulip, a wider glass, and everybody thinks it's the way to go.
I just wish I was could get away with being able to call this a Stein, like you do. I have to call it a Stein. If I called it a Stein, everyone would call me a douchebag and tell me to shut up. It's like when you call a Jaguar. You probably heard that in Europe. It's always the Jaguar. It's like, no, it's just a Jaguar. Don't be a dick. one day, I'm going to work on that. I'm going to try and work that into my repertoire. So what was your influence here at the brewery coming in? I mean, how was it compared to them, the beers being made, and how has that changed since you've been here?
When I started here, the whole was still called microbreweries back today for once. I mean, that was a big difference, and you still had the big beers out here and pretty prominent. And it was much wilder time back the day. There were not that many other breweries out there. Brewfest was still, 10 breweries would be out there, and it was the beer connoisseurs, the tourists that would come to a Brewfest. Now it turned into a much bigger thing. Out of state breweries, East Coast, West Coast, much more readily available in stores now.
Sure.
I would say that is the biggest difference. Back the day, being regional, being a local brewery, was selling, a Montana brewery, selling in the Northwest.
Yeah.
And now it kind of condensed it more. Local really means sometimes this block.
This block, yeah, definitely. Well, and there's such a growth in the brewery scene in all across America, but especially in the Northwest. I mean, I live in Spokane now, and just in the, you know, within an hour of Spokane proper, there's probably close to 25 breweries.
Correct.
You know, I mean, and you go out a little farther than that and you're pushing close to 35 or so, you know, so really it's growing so rapidly. So are you guys, I mean, this is the same, you guys have been in this location for 15 years or so?
Yes.
So about since you started.
Correct.
Has there been any thought of, I mean, you guys added the bistro side of the restaurant side of the brewery, but have you thought about additional locations, branching out to other areas with tap rooms?
Location and branching out, it's not on a menu. We just got a 10,000 barrel limit lifted or increased to 60,000 barrels.
Yeah.
So that is a big game changer here in the state, and we will see how it all develops. The way I see it now is the industry is in a change because there is so many there are so many breweries out there, shelves are filling up.
Right.
So I think that all needs to be consolidated a little bit, and then we can start growing again. So opening other breweries, we are a production facility with a tasting room. We are not a chain brewery like you would find them in the big cities. It's just not our business model.
So you're and that's, I'm glad you said that, because there's a lot of breweries that open with different intent, and it sounds like Bayern is intended to be a distribution brewery. You want to distribute. You have a tap room, as you said, for people to come enjoy your beer and have the restaurant side, but the main goal is distribution of the product to other areas.
Correct.
So where can people find you guys outside of Missoula?
So we are all over the state. So we have statewide distribution. Then we have the Coeur d'Alene area. Mm-hmm. And then we have the state of Washington.
Yeah.
And then we are in Portland, Eugene, and Cody, Wyoming.
So I've seen the Dragon's Breath is the most common. The Dragon's Breath, which is like a stout?
It's a dark wheat beer.
Dark hef?
Yes.
Is that what's called dark hef? So that's the one I most commonly see. Is that your most heavily distributed beer?
It's a popular one, but we are not a one-hit wonder. So we have, all our beers are selling well. Dragon's Breath, hands down, would be across wherever we are. People buy it, but West Coast, Seattle area, Portland, Pilsner, and Hillis.
Lighter,
because we do that, this niche of lagers, and we do it for 30 years. We really have people following that.
Yeah.
And then we have a pretty intense, deep seasonal program. Again, Bavarian styles, Doppelbock Oktoberfest. And those are usually very intense weeks. It comes out and it's a big go for it until it's done, and then you do the next one. So it's very rapid seasonals.
Sure. So you guys were once a microbrewery. You're now, is it too much to say you guys are now like a nano brewery?
Well,
or a macro brewery.
Well, back to debate.
It was
Or
what is, where do you call, so, where do you say now?
Back the day, there were the big guys, the domestics.
Right.
And then if you were a smaller brewery, the word was a microbrewery.
Right.
Because you're not big, you were micro, you were small. Yeah. And then it turned into craft beer.
Yep.
Regional craft brewers. And then tap room brewers. And then nano brewers is where they really have really small batch sizes.
So you guys more of a macro brewery then.
We are a craft brewery.
Okay.
We are a locally owned, independent craft brewery.
How much beer are you guys producing a month?
So we do 10,000 barrels a year, so we are at 800 some barrels a month.
You're probably better at math than I am. I'll take your word for it. So that's a lot of beer. And how much of that is pushed out, distributed? How much of that is in through the tap room?
I would say we sell most of our beer out the doors. Okay. If you look at our packaging line, we bottle between 1,600 and 2,000 cases any given week. It's going off premise, and then we keg quite a bit, 200 kegs plus every week. So we have a pretty large distribution channel.
Okay. And how many beers do you guys have on tap currently?
Eight.
Eight? And how many of those are staples? Always on.
The year-round beers is the Dragon's Breath, our Pilsner, our Hellas, our Amber, the first beer brewed by this company. Hefeweizen we got on year-round, and we have a dark lager called a Schwarzbier, and then it's the seasonal. So right now it's the Dump Truck, Inconceivable, one of our newest beers in the lineup. Citra Dump Truck will come out after the 4th as one of the seasonals. So yeah, we are with 9 now.
Okay.
I think they can put 9 on here.
Okay. And how much do you actually get to sit down and brew beer and work on recipes and actually, I mean, after being here so long and for your position now, what do you, how often do you actually get in there and really work on new stuff?
If you look from the outside in, it always looks the same, which is true because the consumer wants to buy the same quality product all the time. Because we're asking a consumer to spend $8.99 of their money on one of our six packs.
Right.
So we believe one of the highest duties we have is to make sure that it's always the same quality.
Yeah.
So you evolve over 15 years You get more details of your company, better technology becomes available, and you try to find ways to implement those new techniques, technologies, and that is the challenging part, even after 15 years being in the brewery. Back today was just catching up and growing, got more. Now that we are kind of, I don't want to say plateau out, but have
kind of reached
a pretty good...
Got a stride going. You kind of reached your stride.
We have now time to really go in and why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Just because we're doing it for 15 years is not enough.
Right.
Why? Is there a reason why we're doing it? And if there's yes, we write it down and then we continue on. So that's where we are
currently. Do you have any beers you want to make? That you know, what are some of the things you want to make or want to put out in the brewery that maybe you plan to or don't have a chance to because of constraints in some way?
I mean, since I'm from Cologne, of course, a Kölsch beer would be
a Kölsch beer. Okay,
that's what they brew in Cologne.
Okay,
and the rule is you need to be able from your brewery to see the cathedral.
Oh wow.
It's a big cathedral in Cologne, so you can call it a true Kölsch beer. Otherwise, it's a Kölsch beer style. Kind of like champagne.
Sure.
Needs to be from the area, or it's champagne style.
Right.
That, of course, is something deep inside. That's, that would be something fun to do.
What is that style of beer? What kind of, what is...
It's a top fermented, light in color, very refreshing beer. It's not a high alcohol one. It's 5%, 5.1.
So very sessionable,
yes.
Is it like a pale type, is it hoppier, maltier?
It's on a fruity malt side. A hoppy, no, but it gets some fruitiness and some malt body to it.
So as a brewer, IPAs are the big range.
Correct.
Do you guys do an IPA?
No.
No. How do you tackle that? Because I'm sure you get people coming in here asking for one often who aren't familiar with your beers, who just want to come to a brewery thinking, I can find an IPA. What's your answer to that?
Well, that we don't have one,
mm-hmm.
and I explain why, because it's that German Bavarian heritage.
Sure.
And that is the niche we are serving into. And if they're really into a hoppy beer, they should give our Pilsner a try. So even though they might have had Pilsners before, ours is very authentic with high bittering units compared to what you would find over there now in Germany, and get it as a slow pour.
Okay.
And the slow pour is where it really develops flavors. So again, you're opening, it's not just IPA and I want to try them all and then have my own opinion. It's really showing what beer can do, how beer behaves.
Well, yeah, and there's other options. People kind of get trapped into this style of beer, but if you're willing to explore other beers, you can understand that there's so many flavor profiles you can get out of certain things. You know,
correct.
A style may not, you know, I mean, you can have most pale ales in the Northwest are essentially an IPA called a pale ale, you know. Actually, that's what I'm drinking right now, your pale ale. And to me, this is like more of a true pale ale. It's not very hoppy. Has a very mellow, you know, again, sessionable, easy drinking beer. So instead
balanced.
Of balanced, yes, perfect. Yeah, perfect way to say it. So, we're gonna get out of your realm of beers and talk about American beers. When it comes to American beers, how do you think they stack up compared to Bavarian style beers?
We don't know yet. It's a pretty young industry.
Personally, like in style-wise, in taste, and profile, and
it is a young industry. So
yeah.
I think it's very hard to compare. What I like about it is the IPA, the Northwestern IPA. That is truly a style that comes from here, that originated out here. So if you look at a worldwide export thing, where you can say, "Yep, that's like." Champagne, it's the IPA that comes from here. So I think that is a pretty cool thing. Beer-wise, I think it's very hard to compare the two worlds. In Germany, it's not the IPAs. It's not the hops that is prominent, which is here a really deep focus point, which, in my opinion, has to do with the beer really needed to be different than the macros. And an easy way to do that is by going in that hoppy direction. So I think that's how it all developed back in the day.
Sure. Well, and at a time, not so now because of the demand, but I believe that there was a time when also the hops, the price of hops was very inexpensive compared to the rest of the ingredients. So people were able to hop up their beers. That was kind of a filler almost to keep, to bring more into the beer.
Yes.
And then now it's such an, now hops are expensive because they're, everyone needs a million of them. So.
And the hop varieties have become like colors where
yes.
This year it's pink. The neons are the big thing. It's the same as hops. There are three styles. You have to have them in your beer.
Right.
And I think that's kind of, it is interesting. I have to admit, but it's also kind of silly that that focus on one or two things, and you have to have, can I get a box? And you look online, you ask other people. So I don't know.
So how much hops do you guys run through here then? I mean, you have to obviously to some degree, but it sounds like probably not making a lot of pails or no IPAs or anything like that. Probably your hop consumption is not
correct.
Near what?
Correct, because we don't do that dry hopping or that really bittering. So that's where most of that money goes into the hops. So we get away with a batch. We use between 12 and 6 kilos of hops.
Okay.
So was that 24 pounds to
Again, 12. Bad math. I don't know. I don't,
in that neighborhood.
Here in the USA, public schools are very bad, Torsten. I grew up in LA, so they were even worse.
So they didn't tell you when we do the interview it's all metric?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I don't even know what metric is.
Okay,
I think that was a video game back in the 80s, right?
Everything is metric until we pay the beer tax. That is one of the other things very special about us.
Really?
Yeah. We do
hectoliters, takes
we do
over.
Kilos, yeah. We do the beer tax, and then we convert to barrels.
Sure. When Canada takes us over, everyone working here will be good to go. I feel like secretly they're just lying low until we.
Okay.
I mean, we're at a low point right now in America. Any moment. So let me ask you this: I think it might be different for you guys here because you have the restaurant now. But what was your feeling when you guys were just a brewery? And Montana's the regulations for how many, liters you could serve someone in a day.
Correct.
Do you guys still have that regulation?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Even with the restaurant?
Correct.
Okay. How does that affect you guys, and how do you feel about that?
It's how they have the alcohol licensing set up here.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is.
Sure.
If they go in and change it all... it might turn things better, things turn worse in other areas. At the end, it's a very simple setup. It's a three-tier system. It's a producer, it's a distributor, and it's a retailer.
Yeah.
And you cannot cross-own licenses unless you come up with your own system where you kind of find the loopholes. So we have an exception rule, and that is the tap room rule, where we can serve 48 ounces per person per day.
Yeah.
And if it comes down to tasting, I think that's plenty of beer.
Sure.
For tasting.
Do you think that there's some hypocrisy in the fact that someone can't drink a limited amount of your beer here, walk down the street to a bar, and drink as much beer as they want to until the bar kicks them out? Isn't there some? Do you think that might limit the breweries a little? They're limiting the breweries and actual local businesses from being able to possibly make more money off their tap room.
I mean, what we like to see is that if people go to the local, our neighbors, and continue drinking there. But it comes down to it's a three-tier system.
Yeah,
and this is how they have it really strict set up. And I don't know how we can loosen it up. I don't know how other states. Dealing with it, but it's a retail privilege, and ours is limited to 48 ounces.
Yeah, well, I can tell you in Idaho and Washington and California and other, you can drink all the beer you want in a brewery. So
how many licenses do they have?
As far as I know, it's just that's a good question. I don't know. I think there's a brewery license, and then if they even have food, I'm sure it's a different license. But they don't limit any intake of beer.
Yeah, the limit, like I said, is because we're not a retailer.
Yeah.
So it really is a tasting room.
Interesting.
And then for tasting, they say 48 ounces is plenty.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. The so I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. So the local area has quite a few breweries. I think you mentioned nine. Did you say nine breweries in the area in Missoula now?
It's in that six, eight. I think nine was Kaplan Planning.
Okay. So we'll say eight, you said. We'll say eight. And you can, you know, expand this out too. I know there's one in Lolo and things like that too. Besides Bayern, what do you think is, in personal opinion, your favorite brewery in town?
You're breaking up. You're going through a tunnel.
losing him. He's slowly backing away from the desk and tiptoeing out the door. Beer-wise, you know, beer, not necessarily just atmosphere and places, because there's some places in town I like their atmosphere better and I like
their
beer.
I give you an opinion on a professional level.
Perfect.
So
nobody listens to the show, it's okay.
I think what Big Sky has done,
okay,
going out with the brewery early on and how many states they cover, they put Montana beer on a map.
Okay.
Because for a lot of people, Montana, Big Sky State, is far away, and Big Sky was early on out there and representing the state.
Yeah.
So on that level, and the brewery they built out there, and it's still the same group out there,
yeah.
That is pretty cool, I really have to say. Then who else do we have in town? Kettle House, how they evolved from a U-brew to the hottest tap room in town, to
yeah,
where you need to be done with your batch by noon, because that's when we open, to a second location, to now a really high-end third production facility. Again, that is something that, well, I have to say, that is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And the way DraftWorks came in and established their tasting room, and grew out from there, from tasting into draft, into cans, and the way they represent themselves and Missoula, again, it's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
They're cool people. And then all the other guys, they really stayed true what they wanted to do, brew beer,
mm-hmm,
go after their passion, and play according to the rules. I mean, that is most here in town where I have to say, very nice. Would I like to work one or the other, or do I say, well, that's something we can take from there, because that was a smart idea they did. Sure.
Very diplomatic answer. Very
there is, because there is no fighting.
Sure, yeah.
There is no stabbing. There is making fun of each other, I would say that, but there's no, there's no fighting. I mean,
right,
they come in here, we sit,
yeah,
together, and they need help, we help out. That is really not going on.
Well, and that's interesting you say that, because that is something I see in every brewery scene I've been in, which is a lot around the, we'll say the west side of the country. We'll talk about Spokane specifically because I live there now. There's a lot of breweries there, and they're all very, very friendly. They all work together. They do collaboration beers. If someone needs something, is out of some sort of ingredient, things like that. It's very cohesive, nice. It's kind of like rising tides lifts all ships, you know. And there's enough room for everyone in the beer world, especially in places like Missoula, where I feel like so many of the breweries really have a unique identity, you know, are all kind of a different style of beer or a very unique setup in their tap room or restaurant, etc. You know,
I agree with that. And the other thing, and that's again on a professional level, sometimes it can be so frustrating to find spare parts or
yeah,
just the right part, or just somebody who knows, who have you encountered that issue? Yeah, just do blah 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 blah. Okay, and it's done.
There you go.
Because we are so far away from everything here, so having another opinion in your field really is helpful.
Okay. Do you guys do any collaboration beers with any of you?
We did it in the past, where we did it for the food bank was one of the beneficiaries of that collaboration brew. But I think then we all got very busy.
Yeah.
And then it kind of fell under the table. I think
sure,
the collaboration brews that are going on now is where in-state and out-of-state breweries are collaborating with each other, but not here in town.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot one more time. Besides anything coming out of this brewery, do you have a favorite local beer that you can name?
You really put me on the spot, don't you?
You can just write it down and pass over me, and I'll just read it, and then just go, okay, interesting, and then just, I'll burn it, and no one will ever know. Or just, you don't have to say favorite, just one that jumps to mind that you think is a, you know, a standout beer that when you've gone around town, you've been to brewery XYZ, and this beer stood out to you for some reason.
Well, it's not in town.
Okay.
Carter's Brewing in Billings. His Pilsner.
His Pilsner. Okay, you got to go to Billings. So I jump out of that. All right. So nothing in Missoula that... So none of the beers in Missoula stand out to you? No, I'm just kidding. So I'm putting words in your mouth now. I'm just kidding.
Well, they're all unique. Isn't that what you said? They all have their own identity?
They do. And I like that. And I like the idea that everyone kind of... has their own thing, and it's great for beer drinkers too, beer lovers, because it makes people want to go visit all the breweries instead of just visiting one, you know, because you're getting a different experience and different beers.
Look at what Moose Drool has done back the day when it came out first.
Mm-hmm.
It was a brown ale,
mm-hmm.
but the whole image, the whole fun playing with it. Because in Germany, it's always very uptight. It's the brewery name and then the style.
Yeah.
So I work for a company called Früh, and we brewed a Kirch. So it's Früh Kirch.
So there's no fun names.
It's very down to earth.
Right.
This is the company, and this is what
we
sell.
Very simple. Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's like a BMW. It's a BMW and then just a number, the engine displacement, you know? It's like, that's it. This is, do you want a V8 with a 360 displacement or what? What do you want? Yeah.
So, but look at what, because that's...
You're a pragmatic people. I appreciate that.
There was a big thing back the day. I think New Belgium Fat Tire is another one that falls in that category. Sierra Nevada was pretty. Sierra Nevada Brewing.
Yeah.
Pale Ale. So brewery and then the name.
Yeah, yeah.
But that moved, and that was for me the first time that I saw that marketing side of it, where a fun, what it's called, a lifestyle connection with a profession, where that came together.
Right. Yeah, the marketing that really took it. And that's important too, as you're coming from a background in sales and marketing. Getting that connection in a name and a design and a logo is so, connecting with the consumer is such a big thing if you want to push your, you know, your product at all.
So that is maybe something that if I go back, and I'm here now for 15, 16 years, that what is most memorable.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Okay. Well, I think we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and do a tasting of a couple of the beers. That work for you?
Yes.
All right. We'll be right back after these messages, guys.
Hello, my gentle snowflakes. This is Deese. You know me as host of The Social Hour, but now you can find me every Tuesday hosting the brand new Drink and Debate podcast. The Drink and Debate is an improv comedy competition in which four teams of comedians from all over the Pacific Northwest face off for beer, glory, and the title of Master Debaters. Wait, what? For beer, glory, as they master debating. Shit. Master to debater. It still sounds like I'm saying masturbate. Master to... son of a bitch. Screw it, we're doing it live! As comedians debate some things. So join us on the Drink and Debate podcast. Every Tuesday, you can find us on socialhourpod.com or on iTunes. And find the Drink and Debate live shows every month at the Spokane Comedy Club, hosted by myself and comedian Nick Cavassier. Go to SpokaneComedyClub.com for all the details. We'll see you there.
All right, guys, and we are back. Thanks for hanging out through that quick commercial break. As always, go to pantspending.com. Check out all the shows on the network. Lots of great new shows coming up. And always, new episodes of The Social Hour every Wednesday on socialhourpod.com and pantspending.com.
And don't forget to check out the Drink and Debate. I'll be hosting that at the Spokane Comedy Club at 315 West Sprague Avenue. That'll be July 2nd. And hit me up if you need tickets. You can find me on, you know where to find me, Facebook, Instagram, all those other places, Twitter, Craigslist, everywhere. I'm around. And now I am still here at Barron Brewery, and I feel like my day is going to be drastically different. I'm going to have to catch an Uber home because I have four large beers in front of me, which Torsten is going to tell me about. And these are steins of beer. So I'm working on it. Steins of beer. So let's talk about these. Which one are we going for first here?
So the first three out of London will be five total. The last one will be the Pilsner. And a good Pils takes 5 minutes to pour.
Okay.
So we are 3 minutes in, so pretty soon she should be here. Bring him out. So from light, we have a Helles, and it's, as the name said, very light in color, not light in alcohol. A staple beer in Bavaria. If you're looking for a beer, that's what you get. And Helles in different forms can be found throughout Germany. So very refreshing, a malt body, very light malt body, and a hop note in the background.
So I'm noticing two things right off the bat. First thing, it's got a really thick head on it, very appealing looking head on it. Also, it looks like it has more body. There's more coming up out of the effervescence coming out of that. Is there a reason for that?
The head, for sure, because we use, as one of our specialty malts, in we use a Spitz malt. So malt that barely started malting and then the germination process stops. And with that, you have a lot of protein in there, and that protein is used to build a nice...
nice head on it?
Foam head, yes.
And what about that body, that pop? It looks like it has a little more effervescence happening also. Is that
I think it just has to do... it's usually a little bit higher carbonated than okay. some of us, and it looks like the bubbles are breaking because it just got poured, and
okay.
it's kind of a hot day.
It's a really nice nose to it. It kind of has a little bit of a, almost like a... fruit note to it, a little bit of fruit note to it. What are you drinking there?
If I'm looking for a beer, these are the Amber or the Helles.
So the Helles. Okay.
It is. I think it's a perfect summer.
That is a great summer beer, and it's you get a little bit of the warmth of the alcohol on it. Is that you said a high alcohol content?
It's a little bit higher. It's in that 6% range.
Okay. Now, what's so? This is your traditional Bavarian beer. You said this is what you find in, you know, most.
Correct. If in most places, all the breweries will carry a Helles.
So a Helles is the style.
Correct.
And now, what? Tell us again what that makes. What goes into that? Is it the yeast or strain, specific yeast strains you're using, or
it's a bottom fermented yeast, and we use a traditional lager yeast. And then in this case, what makes it so bright, and also you should get an acidic sensation because we use acidic malt in there. That what gives it this really, really light appearance, which makes it very easy for the hops to come through. So we use Hallertau Pearly for the bittering, and then the Tettnanger on the aroma side. And even a little bit, because it's a very mild bitterness you get, and even a little bit will come through because the Pilsner malt doesn't carry a lot of volume.
Yeah. That's real for... I can already...
Focus.
We still got some show to do here. I'm a professional, damn it. Pull it together. No, that's a really good beer. It's funny because every time the... this is like... these styles of beers are like fish and chips for me. I don't have them often, but when I do, like, why don't I have that more often? You know, like it just, I don't, because I usually gravitate towards like a porter,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then I have these beers, I'm like, God, this is such a great, there's so much going on. Most people look at lighter beers, you know, and don't realize how complex they can be.
Correct.
So
to go back in the history of the beer or the microbrew, craft brew, because then the next beer is, I think it clearly shows the reason why it had to be a little bit darker. because you really wanted to differentiate yourself from the Coors, from the Millers, from the Budweisers out there.
Yeah.
So it needed to be a little bit on the maltier side. Again, an amber or Madsen style is not a very hoppy one. It just offers a lot of malt body to it. So it's a very good transition from a Helles, a light beer, light in color, not light in alcohol, to get a consumer to try out one of these ambers.
All right, I'm going to move that amber first. I feel a lot of pressure to finish this first, though. Hold on. It's a good thing I don't have anything else to do today. If you find me passed out under a bridge or down by the river later, just leave me. I'll be fine.
The boss always says there's no shame in slowing down.
Well, we... So when we do this, we usually do tasters. Thorsten brought me four full steins of beer. So, and there's more coming. So...
It looks better full.
That's true. Yeah. All right. We're on to number two. And this is, say the name of this one again for me.
So it's the Bayern Amber, the first beer made by Bayern in 1987. First beer bottled. For the longest time, only available in Montana. And it's a Madsen style.
Okay.
So heavier on the malt side, darker color, amber color to it.
A little still copper tone.
Very mild on the hop side. So again, if you go back in history, microbrew, connecting with your consumers, that was a good transfer beer from domestic into the craft beer world.
Very malty. It has a little bit of a dryness to it. Like, is that have to do with the hopping in it, or?
It should not be. It should be. I mean, it's not sweet because it's a fully all the way through fermented lager. So it shouldn't have any dryness. Mm.
Maybe it's the one.
The Helles is more on a drier side.
Okay. I think I was just clearing the rest of that out. I took a big giant hit of that right before we went to this.
So this bread.
What's that?
Some water.
Some water. Yeah. No, it'll out. Yeah, it'll be all right. The, just pizza. I need pizza after this. So that's the go-to beer or food after beer, right? So this was the original beer. Has the recipe changed at all over time for you guys?
No. It's always been the same. The only thing that changes is Mother Nature producing different raw materials out in the agricultural world. So there are years where the hop load is a little bit heavier, the yield is a little bit lower, but it's always has been the same recipe.
So you mentioned something about how this is a good beer that... kind of a crossover from your Bud Lights, Coors, the mass beers. I'm going to ask you a question you may not be at liberty to answer. But given the production of your brewery and the size you guys are going, have you guys been approached by any larger breweries, like any national breweries about purchasing you guys? Or
no, not that I'm aware of. We had people visit because...
Sure.
As we said, we're all in the beer industry, are very friendly, and then... we had some of the bigger breweries in here, but never been approached. And I think it has to do with being in Montana, far away from everything, a million people. And then our name is not that readily available out on the West Coast like some of our of the other examples that got picked up.
Yeah, like Elysian and things
correct.
Like that have been...
10 Barrel.
Yeah, kind of gobbled up recently.
Yes.
So what do you think that effect has on the brewery industry? Do you think that's... good thing, bad thing, neutral?
I'm a believer in the whole craft beer industry got to the point because it was a quality product and it also was locally produced. It wasn't just a corporation. It was produced and usually knew the owner because he was still heavily involved in it. So if other brands get picked up and I think it waters down the... perception of the consumer. What is a true craft independent and what is owned by a bigger corporation?
With that in mind, the actual Pilsner has arrived. Is this at the end? Should we do this at the end?
Or what? The last beer, I would do it after the Amber because then
okay,
you get
we'll
more
do it
of
next.
That. Satsop flavor in it.
This is that's an impressive pour. That looks like the je ne sais quoi that comes along. There's a presentation of that is amazing. I'm gonna take a picture of this before I drink it, and I'll put it up on the website, guys, because this is quite impressive. I want to get a top shot. Get a couple shots here. There you go. Put your logo in there too, so they know where we're. That is quite a beer. Okay, I'm looking forward to that. So I'm gonna finish this one, or drink more of it anyway. So which the amber is the oldest beer. How long was this the only beer that was brewed before the next one came along?
I believe, and I could be wrong here, until the following St. Patty's Day. Because it's a big thing here, Butte being 200 miles, no, not 200, 100 some miles yeah. away, and being one of the largest parties west of the Mississippi, Jürgen was approached to brew a beer for that special day.
Sure.
So since we brew according to the law of purity, a green beer is just not an option.
Sure.
Because with the ingredients we have, although hops is green, you don't get the color out of it.
Right.
So he went with a red beer. And the Irish Red Lager was born.
There you go.
And that was the second beer style. And then it went to Pilsner, and then Oktoberfest, a Doppelbock, and then we grew it into what we have these days, 14, 16 beers, yeah.
How often do you rotate beers? I mean, you said you have six, seven staples that stay?
So we have one, two, three, four, five year-round beers. And then we have five classic seasonals, and then we have four summer winter beers, so two for the summer and two for the winter.
Okay.
And then we have some specials here and some specials there. Inconceivable is one. We will see how that develops. We have a celebration Pilsner for our anniversary year, so we come out with new things on a pretty regular schedule.
Yeah. You guys have done a special edition or some sort of alternate version of the Dragon's Breath, right? Have I seen something that is like a barrel-aged or something with the Dragon's Breath before?
We, in the wintertime, we do a Bad Santa.
Maybe that's it.
It's a Doppelbock where the water has been frozen out. So instead of distilling, so by heat, evaporating water, we condense the beer by freezing out water.
Now, what's the difference? What's the difference in the way that's made?
So, it's not heat-treated, it's cold-treated. So, I would call it, back the day it was an accident, a beer tank froze. So, the alcohol content goes up, and we do it here intentionally to get a high alcohol beer.
Oh, so it's it creates a higher up. Okay.
Because water comes out, so the alcohol content goes up.
Makes sense. It's science.
Yes.
Beer science.
Steins. Keep drinking. Yeah. It will be easier.
Yeah, it'll be easier. Right? Yeah, no worries. Maybe you speak regularly. You speak like I do. You're just drunk all the time. Maybe that's what it is. I don't realize it. You just have your, you just have a better demeanor about it. So, we're almost this Pilsner. All right, I'm gonna pause on that one. How does that sound?
That's fair.
And then, because I want to get into this Pilsner while that head's still there.
So the Pilsner, the slow pour. The idea is. You decarbonate it by just filling it from the bottom to the top, as it sounds, by creating lots of disturbance. So CO2 comes out. With that disturbance, protein breaks and makes foam.
Okay.
And you make a nice thick foam layer that protects the flavors that are still left in the beer. With the CO2 being out, your tongue now has a chance to really pick up the nuances in a beer.
So, to drive this home, this is truly a 5-minute pour. It takes 5 minutes to pour this beer from top to bottom. It's in a large flute, is that what you call this?
Yes.
About 10 inches tall. And not efficient if you're trying to get a lot of beers out, but it completely brings out a different flavor in the beer. You're unique. Now, do you do this on a regular pour or only on a slow pour?
We do the Pilsner is slow pour only unless you order it specifically as a regular.
Okay. So we're going to try this, guys. Hold on, I'm going to try more. It's very... That's really good. First thing I'm going to say is that was worth the 5 minute wait. It's extremely creamy and like there's certainly a mouthfeel to it. It gives you more presence than in most beers. Most beers are, you know, the lack of carb for me. So I'm not a big fan of beers on nitro.
Mm-hmm.
This tastes almost, I mean, you get that similar creamier feel, but it doesn't eliminate any flavor. I've never had this beer not in this fashion. But you still are getting a lot of flavor out of it. I'm going to go back for more. There's a little bit of a malt back to it at the very end. Which I like. That's very easy drinking too. What's the ABV on that?
It's 5%. It's a true Pilsner. So it needs to have between 5.4%.
What's interesting is how pronounced the nose on it is. It's got a lot of aroma. And then a very more approachable drinkability, if that makes sense. You know, a lot of beers with a really strong aroma can be overwhelming on the palate.
Mm-hmm.
That's really great. How do you describe that to people when you're offering it to them? How would you describe that to someone?
Well, the first thing I would say, you might have had Pilsners, but you haven't had a 5 minute pour. So right there, people are interested in trying it out. And then I say what I told you, why we have that thick foam layer on there, and the things that should be picked up. With the CO2 being gone, your tongue now finally has a chance to pick up more of those nuances in the beer. And it's almost like drinking out of a wooden barrel. Have you had beer out of a wooden barrel?
I have not.
It's the same effect because gravity, flow, not forced out. So the CO2 is already decarbonated. It warms up when it comes out. And it just opens up so much more to taste the beer.
So how come just this beer instead of all the beers or any beer on a 5 minute pour?
I mean, the Pilsner is the most famous for it.
Okay.
And the main reason why, I think it has to do with the grandfather of all aroma, European, German aroma hops, the Satz hops, is what they're trying to showcase even back today. And it's the Czech Satz hops that really makes the Pilsner a true Pilsner.
It completely eliminates all the carbonation out of this.
Well, it's not completely. There's still some going on, but by pouring it in there, bubbles will form, CO2 will come out.
Okay, but eliminating most of it.
Correct.
Is this a popular beer for you guys here at the tap room? Do you pour a lot of these?
We do. A lot of people come in because it's one of the few places where you can do it. There are a couple more in town, but most don't. And people love, because look at the presentation, the foam is still clinging to the top of the glass. I think it's very special.
Well, no, it's very unique and something you don't find at other places. I mean, I've never seen that anywhere else, and I've been to a lot of breweries. How common is this in breweries around the area, or at all in America?
Like I said, I couldn't...
Couldn't find another
one. The Pilsner is a niche beer, so not very common.
Right.
At Carter's in Billings, I think you could get one. I think Red Lodge, because they brew a Pils, they do that too. But a lot of other places, I know.
And describe the benefit of doing it in the flute as opposed to a stein.
With the smaller opening of the glass, you keep a lot of more aroma inside the glass. It can't evaporate out, and it's just big enough so when you put your nose in there, you will pick these.
You'll pick it up, yeah.
Up.
And you really do. You get a lot of that really, really powerful notes. And I think when you take a little hit of that smell and then taste it, you get a lot, the combination between the two. Yeah, that's excellent. I generally don't like beers that aren't carbonated. I like the pop. I like the body of a beer.
Remember, it is carbonated.
Oh, I mean,
and by the pouring technique, we take some of that carbonation
sure.
out.
Yeah, so it's still carbonated. But
so in
you
red
don't...
wine, the bottle is open. They call it breathing. Mm-hmm. And the way we decarbonate, and in a sense, it kind of breathes too.
It's an interesting technique. Have you considered doing any of the other beers on a 5-minute pour? Is that really just kind of an exclusive thing to a Pilsner traditionally?
I think it's a German thinking.
Joke, just, yeah, well.
We have done it forever, and this is how we're going to do it. And I mean, you said the efficiency of the pouring. You would go to places in Germany that would have 10 beers already started. Mm-hmm. So you would not wait 5 minutes for your beer because there was a beer that started 5 minutes earlier, and they get it out to you.
So that's an interesting point. If you were to pour that, do the 5-minute pour and let it sit, like a wine that sits and breathes, if you let it sit for a few minutes after it pours, is it getting more, you know, flavor profile in it also? Or is there a certain saturation point where it starts, you're getting negative returns on it?
I mean, there's certainly a point, I'm with you, if they're really flat, I can't handle that. So talking about the Stein, because we have little ones here, mm-hmm. True Bavarian is a liter. So that's a lot of beer you have to go through before you, and then you usually, by then you're singing and dancing, so you shake
what
the
you
CO2 out of it.
What's the song they sing the most?
So I don't know if that works with every beer.
Yeah.
But like I said, the October, if you, next time we're in Spokane, I will let you know and we tap a wooden barrel. Because you see,
sounds
I mean,
great.
They do the firkins here, but a true uh-huh. wooden barrel, and it's we do true Oktoberfest style. It's a true oak barrel with wooden bungs. There is a difference. You can have a beer off tap and say, that's awesome, and then you have one out of wooden barrel, and you say, that's totally different. I'm blown away.
Beer.
The whole presentation that comes with it. And at the end, we're talking about something we consume and we want to enjoy. We want to get the senses. Yes, there's alcohol in it, but I think the first is the impressions you get out of it.
So when you say out of a wooden barrel, do you mean not even run through CO2, just completely out of a wooden barrel? Or?
It's the wooden barrel back the day was a form of getting the beer from the place of production to the place of consumption.
Sure.
So a wooden barrel is a container that holds the beer like a barrel these days. It's just gravity fed. So you pound your spigot in the bottom, a breather on top, and that's how you pour your beer.
And that's it.
Correct.
No CO2, no nothing. So,
correct. Just gravity flow.
That's it. There you go. The it reminds me in Spokane, especially right now in the Northwest, there's a big trend for sour beers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I've had beer out of a barrel from what they call a wine thief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like a turkey baster, if sure you're familiar with it. So I've a little bit of that effect, but still probably a little different than the movement through an actual barrel.
It's a regular beer.
Yeah.
And by the way it comes out and it decarbonates and it warms up, you get a different sensation when you drink it.
Have you guys considered any barrel aging sour, things like that here, or is that just too far off the radar for a Bavarian style?
It is, but then with our inconceivable, we are set up to do inconceivable things in the future.
Right.
So maybe, but for now, we're busy with what we have,
yeah.
So we will see if that in the future is a thing we're going to go into.
Okay.
I think that Bad Santa and what you can do on that side, making beers different, is a very, very interesting technique.
Yeah, the ability to take a beer you already make and kind of let it
twist
sit
it.
And tweak, yeah, and twist it and kind of let it become something through time and nature. You know, there's not a lot of playing with it, it's just letting it
correct
work. So, are there any local wineries? There's not really.
We have Ten Spoon.
Ten Spoon, okay.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people take, you know, wine barrels and, or if there's any distilleries, whiskey barrels and things like that. So
that works, but the beers need to be flat when they, ours are naturally carbonated, so all the beers we have, when they are done, they already have the CO2 in it. You fill it in a barrel like that, the barrel would...
Oh, that makes sense. So, yeah. Or do you have the ability to make any of your beers flat to be able to, like, not produce them that way, or are they...
By accident, we could.
You, If you produce beer incorrectly, if someone screwed up along the way,
we could do that. Yeah, yes.
If someone screwed up and got fired,
yes,
you could make a beer. Got
they
it.
Could.
Okay. All right, what's next? This is a dark beer we've got up next here.
So we have the very light one, the Helles. Then we had the Amber, the first one. The Pilsner was the presentation and the hops coming out. So now on the other side, where it's really the malt body, and people always get scared by dark beers, ours do have that malt body. Mm-hmm. They do have a bitterness to them. And the beer I got here, it's a dark lager. You will love to pronounce it. It's called a Schwarzbier.
Schwarzbier.
There you go. And you will be surprised when you drink it.
I would be in Germany in no time. It would be great. For you listeners, the look on my face is confusion, not out of anything bad. But I just drank a beer that is very dark, and I'm trying to find the words to describe it. That is a very approachable dark beer is the first thing I want to say. Not, you know, there's a lot of dark beers you drink that are like a meal, you know?
Thick.
Right. Thick, viscous. You drink one of them and you're full. This is something I feel like I could drink a lot of. What's the ABV on this?
That's another five, six.
Yeah. So are most of your beers about that yes. range? So you don't do a lot of Imperials or anything really?
No.
Okay. Because that's a really dark beer.
I know.
It's got a little bit of malty. Definitely, there's almost a little bit of a chocolatey flavor in there. Do you guys use any chocolate malt? Or
yes.
Okay.
So the base of it is, of course, Pilsner and Munich malt. That's what gives you the body to it. And then that's when it becomes tricky, using the correct amount of chocolate malt and good chocolate malt so you don't get that burnt, roasty flavor out.
Right. Is that partly how long you let it go for? Because it starts to roast out if you let the wort go too long? Is that...
No, that comes from the malting facility.
Okay.
Easiest way to explain it, if you have a toaster at home, the one setting gets your Pilsner malt, 10 setting gets you a roasted malt.
Okay, got
so,
it. So it's all about how long the malt
correct.
Has been.
And then... if it's really burnt, you get that burnt flavor, but you can make it dark where it's doesn't give you that burnt sensation in the beer, and that is the key. And again, we're doing it for so long, we do have the key to get this done.
How long has this beer been around?
Well, since I have been here, but it's one of our on the back burner kind of beers.
So this isn't one of your everyday beers, or this isn't on the...
It's one of our least distributed beers out there. And I think it has to do with the pronunciation. Which is?
Schwarzbier.
There you go.
Got it. I nailed it. Yeah, got it. Can't wait to be on the Autobahn and drive so fast. Do you still go back home?
Yes.
At all?
Once a year, twice a year. No, once a year, usually.
So do you, while you're there, do you... I'm sure you visit beer breweries or go drink at places, but do you draw inspiration from that and bring it back home or bring it back to here for beers?
The traditions, for sure. The beer itself, yes, sometimes there's an idea, there's something cool, but you asked me about the U.S. beers.
Yeah.
Even the Germans call craft beer.
Okay.
There's no word for craft beer.
Right.
Or manufacturer,
right.
None,
sure.
Let's say. There is none. They call it craft beer. So that wave that started here is going over to Germany. There are places popping up, I wouldn't say as fast as it did here,
mm-hmm.
and it's still doing, but they are popping up. The younger people are totally digging handcrafted beers. My dad, probably not so much, but
yeah.
That generation, the younger generation, they really dig that.
That's an interesting point. How much is America's effect on beer? Because I feel like America is the hub of craft beer and what I want to call provocative craft beer, meaning they're really, really, exploring the whole genre. you know, putting new things into it and adding new things and barely and just these different things that the rest of the world isn't doing. Is that spewing over into beer, you know, beer scenes in other parts of the world?
The trying out stuff, for sure. Different things, not so much. There's still that law of purity in Germany, and it's very strong. They might tweak it here and there, but it's you wouldn't find a marshmallow roasted to the side of a glass and a beer poured over, and then you taste it.
Are you talking about Cascade Brewery? And
I don't know. I heard that somewhere they roast a marshmallow.
In Portland, Oregon, at Base Camp Brewery, yes, they roast marshmallows and put them on the side of a smoky espresso stout. So
I don't think you would find that.
In Germany?
In Germany.
Well, the tradition runs a little stronger in places like that. America runs a little fast and loose with everything they do.
Yeah. But again, it's finding your identity. Northwest IPA.
Sure.
There was an identity found, and it's still out there. It's going strong. It's spreading worldwide. It's you need to find what is your identity. And in Germany, I think the biggest thing that changed is different hops. Because you had your typical hops out there, and U.S. hops, Yakima Valley has a big one. They bring them over there, and people try them out. So now the German hop growers are growing these very aromatic hop varieties.
So let me ask you this. If you were to go to Germany, would you be able to find an IPA somewhere?
Yes.
Would it be prevalent?
No.
No. Somewhere you'd be able to find it, but correct. It would not be at every bar?
No.
No.
Okay. It would be probably in a bistro, in a hip bistro, in a hip bar.
The young, but in, cooler, hippie.
Well, all the new open and people that traveled the world and people that read the magazines. That's where you would find it. But regular in a store or in bars just going out, I think, no.
They're drinking Pilsners?
Pilsners,
or
North.
Lagers.
Kölsch, where I'm from, and in Bavaria, you have from the wheat beers to Helles to Märzen style. You have different choices there.
Okay. Pause while I'm drinking my beer. Sorry, I'm trying to get the rest of this, the Schwarzbier. Schwarzbier? Is that it? Yep. It does, just takes a couple beers and you're like, you're really good at this.
Good in German.
Yeah, good in German. Just get drunk. That's what I do. I just travel the world and get drunk. It's a great life. Okay, we're on to our last beer. And just for you listeners, I didn't finish all the beers, but I will eventually.
Close though.
Yeah, close. I'll get there.
So the first four you tried, again, very traditional. Bayern Pilsner, Bayern Amber, a Bayern Helles, a Bayern Schwarzbier. Or Schwarzbier. Schwarzbier is how I pronounce it for the public. Schwarzbier. So the latest one, and that is where we kind of make that turn into where we are located. Mm-hmm. So we do some dry hopping, and it's one of our few beers where we don't use German hops. So in this beer, it's a part of our Inconceivable series, because we do inconceivable things with it. And that's the second edition of it. We use a Denali hop, speaking of the game of hop styles or varieties coming out as the bittering
a Denali
hops. Denali?
I've never even heard of that.
There you go.
See, I mean, this year I've heard of, like, for the first time, Egyptian, Stargazer, and all these other hops that you generally don't hear. And now Denali hops.
Denali hops.
All right.
So that's a new one.
New one.
They call it a multi-purpose hop, so we use it on the bittering side. And it's one of our heavy hopped ones, so pale ale fits the description here, although it's not an ale, it's still brewed with a lager yeast. And then on the aroma side, it's lemon drop, and it's lemon drop in the whirlpool and lemon drop on the dry hopping side.
You can definitely smell that lemon. There's a citrusy hint in that. The one thing I'd like to note is how much, again, like the Pilsner and the first beer we had, which was the
Helles,
the sturdy head on it, that thickness in the head, God, it's been sitting here for 20 minutes, still very pronounced head on it. So
So the head you get with
Wow.
Hoppy beers.
Yep. Right.
They have the ability to maintain the head retention. So the hoppier the beer, other factors are part of it too, but the hoppier the beer, the thicker the foam can hang.
That definitely seems like the closest to an IPA you guys have. There is some hoppiness there. It's very you get a little bit at the front end. You kind of get a little hit of it, but it goes away very quickly and kind of just dissipates into a very smooth, easy drinking beer. That's a good river beer. That's a good river beer, you know. You're floating down the river, you get that little sunny citrus hop hit, and then just smooth and drinkable. So, do you guys bottle this at all?
You do. Yes.
How many of your beers do you guys bottle locally?
By now, most of our beers are bottled. The Schwartz is part of our limited release program. We have that usually out in the wintertime. And all the others come out for their season, or available year-round.
Wow. We were looking up in the office here. There's all the six-packs of...
A selection. There's more.
But that's the Inconceivable, the Original Lager. Very, very nice, very nice. So this, is this the beer you usually point people to if they come in looking for an IPA?
Now we do, since it's our newest beer out, that is, we say give it a try.
So if you guys get a beer that really hits, is it something you look at working into the regular lineup so you have it all the time?
Well, we are not there yet. So we were pretty busy with the beers we had out, and Inconceivable Edition number 2. We are not sure yet which one out of two we could choose. Certainly something to think about, but the problem we run into is there's so many beers on the shelf. And you want to offer fresh beers on the shelf. So how do you make that connection between fresh moving on the shelf and just having another thing on the shelf?
Yeah. So what is coming up for Bay and Brewery in the... what should people look forward to, whether beers or growth or...
Well, this year is the 30th anniversary.
Oh, let's talk about that. You guys have an event coming up.
Correct. That is Saturday, August 19th, downtown. And we have a special beer we brewed for our anniversary.
Are you allowed to talk about it?
It's called the Celebration Pilsner. The idea behind was, well, it's 30 years, so just the bottle cap won't cut it. Mm-hmm. Or a little neck hanger around the bottle. So we had to have a beer for it. Totally makes sense. And then the question always is, how do you brew the beer? What kind of beer do you brew? So with being a German-style brewery, a Pilsner, I think it's a pretty good connection of a style to choose. Mm-hmm. And then we are a Bavarian-style brewery. The owner is from Bavaria. So we try to connect where he is from. Also, when everything started, so it has a floor malt in there. So not just a regular malted barley variety, it's a floor malt in there. And then all the malt varieties we use in there, we use Northern Brewer, Spalt, Tettnang, close to where the owner is from. So that is the local connection to his birthplace. And then the connection to Missoula, where everything started, is the artist who made the poster artwork. Mm-hmm. Monty Dolak gave us one of his very early on pieces and said that would be a fun label for your bottle. And this is how we tied in Missoula, Montana, Bayern, the owner, Jürgen, to this beer.
How did Jürgen end up in Missoula?
The owners that opened up first the brewery were investors. They had restaurant businesses.
Oh, I see.
And they needed somebody to get the brewery going. And he came over right after school to help get it started. The wall came down over in Germany. And they said, well...
Thanks to David Hasselhoff.
We want to invest now in Eastern Germany. And he had a chance to purchase the brewery.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Here we are.
Because if you think about it, if it was investor, you know, he wasn't the original owner. So Bay and Brewery could have gone a lot of directions. You know, at that point, it was not a Bavarian-style brewery, correct?
Correct.
But when he was brought in, that's the direction it went, and it formed an identity.
Yeah, but that's life. If the wall wouldn't have come down, because he says he was looking into going to China, get things started, and in China they had the person ran over by a tank, so that wasn't a safe place to go.
Tiananmen Square is the best place to vacation, I've heard.
So it's history. I mean, if now we look back how things were connected and where we're sitting now and what we're drinking, and drinking Inconceivable, which I believe 30 years back he never thought he would do stuff like that.
Right.
It's where we are. It's a very interesting development. The beers, how they develop from the domestic we had, and he had to come up with something different, more colorful, but he couldn't go too bitter, to Bayern Amber, to Moose Drool Big Sky Brewing, where the name and the lifestyle that came up with it. If you look at it, and 30 years seems like a long time, but it is not for a business. It's not a long time.
Right. Well, because it's so incremental. You know, it's so incremental. And there's those small steps of, you know, you start a brewery and there's a amber, which is pretty innocuous. It's a pretty innocuous beer, in amber. You have someone come in who's from Bavaria, and you that kind of transitions your brewery into an identity, and then all of a sudden over time that becomes your reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you've created a monster out of it. I mean, you've got a great brewery, you've got a great, the restaurant just opened 2 years ago, and coming up on the 30-year anniversary, and now you guys are distributing all over west of the Mississippi.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
Well, not all of west.
I mean, not all of it. I mean,
close to it.
We'll just
depends
say,
on the map you look at.
Right, yeah. You know, I mean, listen, I'm not a topographer. I don't know. But you guys are doing pretty well.
Can't complain. And it's still fun.
Yeah.
People always ask me, what do you like about the job? And I have to say, at the end of the week, you have a product in your hand. As silly as it sounds, but you really do. It's not just paperwork and a stamp. It really is something you're holding in your hand.
Not only do you have a product, but you have people enjoying the product in front of you.
Most of the time.
You guys have a great, great setup here. What's the address? The address is 1507 Montana Avenue? Montana Street in Missoula, Montana. If you're in the area, I know we have some listeners in Missoula and Montana, but also if you're out of the area, check out Baron Brewery. They're at 1507 Montana Street in Missoula, Montana. Quality-wise, beer-wise, they've got some of the best beers in the region. Unique. You'll not be disappointed by the experience or the beers or the people. Anything? Any last words, Thorsten?
Prost.
Probst?
Yeah.
Tell me what that means.
Well, cheers.
It means cheers.
So, post, and now the important part, while it is a Stein, because you really can smack it.
The Stein. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you hanging out. I appreciate the beers. It was a great experience. And for the social hour, I am Deese. And for Thorsten, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming.
All right.
And now for my weekly apologies. I'd like to apologize to Bavaria. Steins, IPAs, Canadians who don't plan to attack America, and that's about it. I was relatively well behaved this week. Thanks for listening, guys, and we will see you next week.
This podcast is a Pants Pending Studios production.
And part of the Pants Pending Studios podcast network.
Find more of our great shows just by searching Pants Pending in your podcatcher.
For more information or to contact us directly, visit us at pantspending.com.
Please subscribe to this show, share it with your friends, like it on Facebook, and rate it on iTunes.
And we thank you for making us a part of your listening day.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending. Studios!